Welcome to the Big Three podcast. This podcast answers three big questions raised from Sunday's sermon by the congregation of Guymere Baptist. The Big Three Pod seeks to discuss these questions, explore issues, unpack theology, provide further information and explanation to help your faith grow. You can listen to the original sermon on your favourite podcast platform or at guymerebaptist.org.au. Our prayer is that this pod helps you as you follow Jesus.
Well, welcome back to the Big Three. We've had a break over Easter, but we're back again. My name is Mark. I'm the senior pastor here at Guymere Baptist Church and your host for the next half hour or so. I do trust that if you are a regular listener of the podcast that you did have not only a relaxing and refreshing Easter, but also an opportunity to really reflect upon and be struck again by the significance of Jesus' death and resurrection, the very heart of our faith, the very foundation of it all. And something that I think sometimes, if I can start with an aside, you know, we hear so regularly and hear so often that it can sometimes lose its impact. And I think Easter and Christmas are two times I think we sometimes struggle to find the space in our lives, in our minds, in our hearts to really kind of focus and allow the Holy Spirit to remind us of those great truths. So I hope you had a little bit of an opportunity to do that in the midst of everything else that may have been going on. After that break, though, for Easter, we finished our series, Lives Changed by Jesus, by looking at one final practice that is both evidence of a life changed by Jesus and a practice that Jesus uses to change us, and that is making disciples. I focused on the Great Commission out of Matthew 28, where Jesus sends his disciples to make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that he has commanded. And I made three observations about that commission with three provisos, which I said on Sunday is kind of preacher speak to say I have 6 points, but I don't want to say I have 6 points. So it's three with three subpoints, essentially. And so those observations were wrapped around the ideas that you find in the text that Jesus has given us a clear outcome of what we're after, right? People who are baptized and not just that they got wet, but that they're committed to the ideas of being saved by faith, of living a new life, and committed to do so with the proviso that that's a long process, a lifelong process. Secondly, that this process of becoming disciples is essentially business as usual. There's not a lot of reference to the disciples or the apostles focusing on the idea of making disciples. They just made disciples. It was what they did. And that business as usual, because it's a lifelong process and deals with people, tends to be a little bit messy. It's a, you know, two steps forward, one step back. It's a little bit uneven, fits and starts and all of those sorts of things. And then finally, I looked at the fact that this is a group project. It's something that we are all given the task to do, but with the important proviso, which sits underneath everything, really, that we have to do it in the authority and in the presence of Jesus. And then together, we celebrated communion, which is important for one of the questions. So that's how we wrapped up the series, the last of those topics. Before we head into our next series, which is Encounter, the latest offering from Olive Tree Media, which really looking forward to as well. But the questions that were raised then are these. First of all, making disciples is business as usual for the church, but what are we not doing? Or perhaps more interestingly, what should we stop doing that we are doing? It's a great question. It's a great question because I know that many of my colleagues over the last number of years, particularly after COVID, have been really focused on kind of asking that question, what haven't we been doing or what are we doing that we need to stop doing? I'll share some reflections on that. Great question to start. Secondly, we can encounter Jesus in different ways from reading the Bible to miraculous events. How can we navigate the mess of disciple making when it's so vast? Again, a really helpful question to, I guess, focus us a little bit on the ways in which we go about not only facilitating and fostering our own following after Jesus, right, our commitment to and faithfulness to him, but also those around us. And then third, to what extent would you say Christ is present in communion? Which is why I mentioned communion a little bit earlier to kind of set the stage for why that question was in there. Yeah, and that'll be a little bit of history for you, which I think I think it'll be fun, but that tells you probably more about me than it does about you. But those are the three questions. Looking forward to answering them. So let's get stuck in. So making disciples is business as usual for the church. It's not something that is an optional extra. It's not some boss level, that you get to when you've kind of figured everything else out. But what are we not doing, or perhaps more interestingly, what should we stop doing that we are doing? And as I mentioned at the outset, a lot of my colleagues in ministry have been really focused on this question. It was a question that I think out of COVID really became even more pressing. Because coming out of COVID, one of the things that I think I realized in a completely different way, and I had known this, but I think COVID amplified it, was that our discipleship processes were very Sunday-centric. Sunday and our services had become very load-bearing in terms of discipleship, right? In other words, most of what we were trying to do, most of the things that we were trying to achieve in terms of equipping and helping people develop as followers of Jesus happened on Sundays. And of course, there's lots of reasons for that, right? It's the traditional day that Christians have gathered together. It is that time of gathered worship, which has some wonderful opportunities for us. But it's not enough. We need more. And so I think it was prior to COVID even, we did some work around, the various contexts of discipleship, you and God, or God and you probably is the better way to put it, right? God and you, you and a few, you and a crew, right? The idea that there are things that God does when you spend time with him alone, and there are things that God does that help our discipleship when we just have one or two people with whom we can be really honest and transparent and authentic. There are things that happen when to grow us when we're in a life group size group, when we're in a mission size group of, say 20 or 30 people. You might be a service team or whatever it might be. And there are things that happen in the big gathering. And all of those things are kind of required to build disciples. And so one of the things that I think that we need to be doing, and maybe stop doing, I don't know how you want to answer it, is to strengthen the non-Sunday supports and contexts for discipleship. We still want to emphasize Sundays. We still, I still want people to, attend church on Sunday. I think it's good to be together. I think it's good to worship together. I think it's good to hear the word together. There's a whole bunch of stuff that happens that when we're together, but to actually strengthen, say our life group space, which has been a bit of an emphasis for us over the last couple of years, and we're continuing to lean into that, to really strengthen that context of discipleship so that we have a second load-bearing wall, right? To try to encourage, the spiritual practices of Sabbath and prayer. We're making slow progress in that space, but ultimately that's a kind of a personal decision to some degree, right? Where individuals are encouraged to pray or individuals are encouraged to practice the Sabbath, right? And that's to strengthen the individual context for discipleship. So I think that's a really important part of what we do. I also think that if there were a key principle, I suppose, it's that, and I want to be careful how I say this, I suppose, It's to encourage people to take as much responsibility for their discipleship as they can. Because ultimately that's what's going to lead to real growth, right? We can hold services, but they are, as much as we want them to be interactive, I suppose, in some way, shape, or form, they are the things that people come to, right? They're an event. And that's both their strength and their weakness. But to encourage people to be spending time in the Word and to be in a life group and to be finding ways to be in those service-type groups, whether it's within the church or outside the church, whether it's short-term or whether it's long-term, to be fostering a relationship with some close friends who you can really talk about some kind of really deep, real stuff. How do we do that? Because I think the church, broadly speaking, has tried to assume too much responsibility, right? Which is, I think, why Sundays became so important. You know, if I'm responsible for equipping the church for discipleship, well, then the best way to do that is Sundays. And so we should pour all of our emphasis and energy into Sundays. And while there is an element, of course, where the church and its leadership, and its pastoral team and whatnot have a role to play in the teaching and the equipping and the correcting and rebuking and encouraging and all those sorts of things, there's just more that has to be done. And so I think that those are the areas that I think are the most important, kind of strengthening the other contexts as best we can and encouraging people to really take the responsibility, which I think most people do, right? If they're serious at all about following Jesus, they need to... We need to kind of help foster that. And probably, it's probably more of a statement about, you know, church leadership of not stepping away from our responsibility, but making sure that we don't make it entirely ours, right? It's not about Sundays or about what I can necessarily do or don't do. It's more about us all together following Jesus. So those are some of my thoughts around things that we should be doing. I think, you know, some of the work that we began to do last year and that I, you know, hope that we'll continue to be able to do wrapped around our faith and our vocation. That was an important part of that, to be able to see that discipleship and following God is not just about evangelism and church work, but it's about like our day-to-day work, the vocation, the things we do with intent and purpose, right, in our lives. Thought that was a really important step as well, to kind of to break down the sacred and secular divide and see that everything is about following Jesus, every aspect of our lives, and that then changes, I think, the ways in which... Because I think one of the things when I talk about the responsibility or the over-responsibility that I think pastors sometimes take... It's that we can seek to provide what we think you need, right? Here's the teaching that I think is helpful. Here's the ways to think about the world that are useful. And I suppose that is. But I think there needs to be more of a grassroots response, right? Of people kind of going, hey, this is what we need. You know, I'm working away in my day-to-day life, and these are the issues I'm grappling with, or this is the stuff that I need to know. And so I think there needs to be more of that give and take, input from both ends. I think I'm just talking in circles now. At any rate, it's a complex issue and one that I know for myself and as I said, a number of my colleagues in ministry has become increasingly important. How do we do this well? How do we make sure that people can be, you know, I think COVID, one of the groups of people who haven't returned, or at least haven't returned here, are those who were kind of, I think, for whom... meeting on a Sunday was really load bearing in their life too. And so when that was taken away, I think their discipleship really suffered. And those are the people that we haven't seen again, in many regards. And they may have gone to other churches. They may have found other patterns of faith, you know, hard to say. But I think it's that widening of the supports, the increasing spaces where we think about discipleship, and really, I suppose I'm getting some clarity even as I'm talking about it, and increasing the discussion about it, right? Sometimes I think the discussion about discipleship has been kind of, shall I say, a discussion that I've had rather than a discussion that we're having. And I think that, you know, to some degree, this question is a great one to kind of increase the conversation around discipleship, because it is really meant to be business as usual, and it's something that we all ought to be doing. So I don't know, in that meandering response, I hope you found something helpful in that. And can I just say, as is often the case, it's really helpful for me even just to try to articulate some of what I've been thinking about in a relatively brief period of time. But anyway, so thanks for that question. That's a great one to start us off. And let's head into question number two. So we're about to enter into our second series. As I said, it's called Encounter. It's the latest resource from Olive Tree Media. And looking at the ways in which we encounter Jesus. And so over the last couple of weeks, I've been kind of talking a bit more about that idea of encountering Jesus. And the question is, we can encounter Jesus in different ways, from reading the Bible to miraculous events. How can we navigate the mess of disciple making when it's so vast? Which is really helpful as a question, because there are so many things in so many ways that we can develop, shall we say, as followers of Jesus. And I reckon that there's probably a couple things that I'd say about this. The first is, one of the hopes that I have harbored for this series is that as we've engaged with, I think it's a dozen different practices, that one or two of them in particular might have resonated with you, and that you might take that up as a focus for 2025. You know, if the idea of service really resonated with you, that you would take that one up, right? And not to say that the others aren't important, but to basically focus our attention on one thing, or maybe two things, right? That we want to begin to focus our time and attention on prayer, on how that can change me as a follower of Jesus, and really deliberately do more in that space, spending more intentional time in prayer, talking to people about prayer, listening to podcasts or sermons or reading books on prayer, like finding opportunities to engage in, like whatever it is, like just really focusing on it. Because sometimes we are too scattered, you know, we hear so much about everything and have access to everything that we can sometimes fail to focus on anything. And to actually take one of these practices and really develop it to the, and I don't want to say to the exclusion of all else, but right to the exclusion of everything else, just focus on this. You know, if other opportunities come up to serve or to read the word or to, you know, to make disciples or whatever it is, like be involved in that, but just focus on a couple of areas. I think that would be really, really, really helpful for us. And it's one of the things that helps us cut through the vastness, right? Because, I mean, honestly, there are so many things, right? There are so many things that, you know, I look at my life and I think, you know, if I wanted to become more like Jesus, I mean, there would be dozens of areas in my life. And each of those areas of my life where I would like to become more like Jesus, I could probably break down into dozens of areas, right? Like there's no end of things that we can do. And sometimes I think we're frozen kind of by paralysis, right? It's just by too many choices. We have so many things that we could do, so many things that are good that we're like, I don't know where to start, which has been part of the motivation behind some of our attempts, and we're still so early in the piece, but to focus on the spiritual practice of prayer and Sabbath. You know, it's not to say that other spiritual practices aren't important or that people who attend our church can't do other practices, but it's essentially to say here at Gymea Baptist, we're going to try to focus on these two areas. Kind of as a reflection of our own cultural setting, but also as a way just to kind of focus our attention a little bit, to kind of go, here are the things we're going to focus on. We're not going to try to focus on everything. In a similar regard, I mean, we haven't done as much as I would like to see in this space, but, you know, like our attempt to focus on a couple of social justice issues, you know, wrapped around your ethical consumerism, you know, which we touch on a couple of times over the year, you know, with Easter chocolates and the fair trade market. And then secondly, to be involved and engaged in the fight against domestic violence, domestic and family violence, mostly through our support of Hopefield. And again, I'd like to do more in that space, but that was an attempt to basically say, of all the things that we could be involved in, of all the very good things that we could be involved in, let's try to focus on these. And I think the second thing that I would say then, you know, kind of outside of the focusing on one or two things and really allowing ourselves to grow in that space, is also to recognize that there are some big streams, traditional streams of spirituality that kind of, shall we say, collect or form certain shapes of discipleship. So years and years ago, I read, it was a very brief article on, I think, five or six or seven types of spiritualities. I think I may have shared this before, but you know, there was an activist spirituality, which I would associate quite strongly, say, with the Salvation Army, right? Where the encounter with Jesus is through the poor, right? Those who are marginalized on the outsides, on the outskirts. That's where we meet Jesus. And so there's this really activist component to it, serving people in really practical kinds of ways. And that's a particular form of spirituality. And then you've got, say, a liturgical spirituality, which is, you know, focused, you know, you might think about, say, a Roman Catholic or a high Anglican background, where there's more focus on the liturgy, on communion, on the church year, on reading through particular liturgical settings and whatnot, and that Jesus is met in those sacraments and those liturgies, which, as you can just from those two, like those are two very different expressions of faith in Jesus. There's an evangelical one, which I remember reading and thinking that's not spirituality. That's just the way people are Christians, which was the clue to me that that might be my spirituality. You know, where you encounter Jesus in quiet time, in reading the word and in prayer. There's an emphasis on evangelism, right? Some of those sorts of things. There was an academic spirituality, which I also resonated with, where, you know, to some degree, Jesus is met in the study. It's in the new ideas. It's in the thinking about. It's in the insights that come from Scripture and wider reflection. And so each of these spiritualities takes particular shape. And I think that might explain why, you know, most churches kind of collect, you know, what's birds of a feather stick together, right? Where you kind of walk into a church and it's like, why is everyone kind of the same in terms of their spirituality? I think this is part of the reason why. That there are certain churches that have a particular spirituality in terms of their kind of the broadest sense. And that too helps us cut through the vastness of the options, right? Because we can kind of go, okay, here are the sorts of things that we really focus on. It also allows us to be aware, I think, of some of the weaknesses, or perhaps a better way to say it is the blind spots in our spirituality, right? To make sure that, you know, we're not just activists, right? We're not just doing stuff. We're also engaging in spiritual practices, right? That we're not just focused on liturgy, but we're also serving those around us, right? So we can be aware of some of those blind spots. But I think those two things in particular help us just focus a little bit. It's still messy, right? Dealing with people, and, you know, being a person, I understand why I create mess, right? For people, right? It's still going to be messy. It's still going to be fits and starts, but that just helps us, I think, focus ourselves a little bit more, right? And to be able to say to people, listen, this is how we follow Jesus here, right? These are the things that we focus on. Not to say that other things are not useful or helpful or bad, but these are the areas that we've chosen to focus on. I think really helps people kind of find their place in God's family and in God's mission here, right? Those are, I think, really helpful ways forward. So those are the things that I would talk about in terms of, you know, kind of trying to decrease, not the mess, but to decrease the vastness of it is probably the way forward. I don't know how you navigate the mess apart from carefully. And graciously, as I said, you know, if it's a bit messy, it's a long process. We, I think, need to extend kindness and grace to ourselves and to those around us as we go through that slow process of being changed to be more like Jesus. At the end of the message, as I said, we celebrated communion together, and the transition to that was to say that, you know, we experience Jesus, we encounter Jesus in this, right? When Jesus has, in his self-sacrifice for us, in his death and his resurrection, right, for us, right, we encounter him in that space. And the third question is, to what extent would you say Christ is present in communion? And again, I'm going to go a little bit, I think this is the direction that the question is going in, so this, that's how I'm going to see it. The question of Jesus's presence in communion was actually a really, really hot topic 500 years ago. And which sounds like something that's no longer relevant, but does shape the ways in which we think about other traditions, right? So in the Middle Ages, communion or the Mass, the Eucharist, became the centerpiece of Christian worship in the West, right? In the Roman Catholic Church, that was the pinnacle of the liturgy. It was the pinnacle of the service. And there was a theology of the real presence of Jesus, right? That he was really, truly present. The official language is the idea that the bread and the wine were transubstantiated. How's that for a word? And the idea was that it was quite philosophical in terms of its approach, but the idea was that when Jesus had said, "This is my body," he meant this is my body in a kind of a real kind of way. And so the idea was that when the bread and the wine were consecrated, and when that act of consecration was completed, that while the bread still looked like, or the wafer still looked like a wafer, tasted like a wafer, acted like a wafer, and the wine still acted like wine and tasted like wine, the essence of both the wafer and the wine had been transformed or transubstantiated to the real body and the real blood of Jesus. Which was why in the late Middle Ages, the cup was often withheld from the laity. So your regular worshiper never was given the cup because it was the real blood of Jesus. And you can't risk spilling that or splashing that around someplace or, right, for anything to happen to it. In the Protestant Reformation, all of the sacraments of the church were kind of up for grabs again. And the early reformers had a really big discussion and disagreement about this. So Martin Luther, the German reformer, he talked about something, I think it was consubstantiation, the idea that the presence of Jesus was surrounding the wafer and surrounding the cup, but that the wafer and the wine were not changed. I think he was struggling to try to leave behind the Roman Catholic belief that he had been raised in while recognizing that recognizing the differences. Other reformers like Ulrich Zwingli, a name that you may not have heard of before, and John Calvin, who you may have, talked about the idea that that communion was a memorial. Which is, you know, when you think about the Roman Catholic setting, almost as far away from transubstantiation as you could get. And his view was that what you have is a piece of bread or a wafer, and you have the wine or the juice, and it's basically a symbol. It doesn't change. There isn't the real presence of Jesus here. It's not as if we are eating his flesh and drinking his blood, as Jesus says himself in John's gospel. It is a wafer and it is some wine, and it reminds us of, it symbolizes for us the death and the resurrection of Jesus. We as Baptists would fall into, broadly speaking, that end of the reformers' views. And so our take, like our belief on communion, is that Jesus's presence is not literal, or shall we say real, in terms of the communion elements, but that he is present in through the Spirit and the gathered community of faith. And that, you know, when we gather together in his name, and when we remember his death and his resurrection, that he is present with us in that space. So communion for us is more symbolic. It's more of a memorial. It's that reminder of what Jesus has done for us. But we would not kind of argue for the real presence of Jesus in communion, which again, for those of you who've had some interactions or have come from a Roman Catholic background, might explain some of what you've encountered as you've come to Gaimia Baptist or as you've gone to other churches, or even as you've returned to a Roman Catholic church, if that was, you know, a church from your childhood or whatever the case might be, that it's a very different theology of what's happening in that space. Obviously, it's a little bit more complicated than I've tried to lay it out, but wanted to try to give a bit of a feel for it there. So it was a really interesting historical question, I reckon, about the presence of Christ in communion. Well, as I said, that brings us to the end of our series, Lives Changed by Jesus. We're starting a new series next week. The Life Group resources will be provided by Olive Tree Media for the next 9 weeks. And the sermons are going to be focused on a variety of passages where Jesus encounters people. And then there's going to be some interaction with not only those stories, but the contemporary stories as well. The Big Three is still going to continue, though. So starting this coming Sunday, Carl Fays, who was the senior pastor at Gaimia Baptist Church for 18 years, I think it was, is going to be preaching, and we'll be taking questions as we continue to engage with what it looks like to be encountered by Jesus. So I'm really looking forward to this series. I suspect that there's going to be a very different set of questions, although I have been wrong before, but I am looking forward to doing that. So we will be back again next week with the Encounter series and hopefully three big questions that have been raised from this coming Sunday's service. But until next week, God bless, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks for joining us at the GBC Big Three podcast. We trust you found this inspiring, encouraging, challenging, but ultimately helpful to enable you to follow Jesus. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can also listen to the We Are The Church podcast, a discussion pod with real stories from real people at Gaimia Baptist as they share their experiences of faith and discipleship in action. If you've enjoyed this pod, why don't you rate and review it? This way others can discover the podcast too.